This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home again this week. It has been so long since I looked at the little meter on the recorder that I think I forgot what it actually meant. And so I looked at it, and I thought it meant that I still had a lot of space, and what it really meant was I had no space. Well, relatively no space. Obviously, I got through the first 8 minutes, and then it died out on me yesterday. So, since we don't have any editing here and everything's just sort of live, I'm recording the second half of this. I had opportunity to run into town for something else, so I thought, well, I'll just run back and finish this up. I was talking about working with Debbie Gratton yesterday, and I just was finishing up talking about the fact that it was just fascinating that she was the first person that I thought, ooh, I want to work with her. And then I did work with her. And then it turns out we have a mutual friend of somebody who I was in the Philippines with. It's just very interesting how life works out. Anyways, and as far as the name of these podcasts, because the one I started yesterday, I named, 5, 10, 17, and the end of the world. And if you listened to the first half, that didn't make any sense at all. We will get to the end of the world in just a moment, but I thought I would pass on to you a little thought that I had this morning, and 2 weeks will tell whether this was an intriguing observation or I was just full of hot air. I had decided this morning that Haley Reinhart is going to win American Idol. I know a lot of people are probably looking at Scotty McCreery and saying, oh, he's going to win, but I'm convinced at this point that Haley's going to win, which is a really fascinating story. For those of you who have been following American Idol, I will just run through my logic real quick, and then we'll get on to the story at hand. For those of you who haven't followed American Idol this season, sorry. You know, I'm going to talk about this anyways. I think the turning point for Haley was when she sang the duet with Casey. Sometimes I slip on names. When she sang the duet with Casey, and it was that jazz duet on Moanin', and all of a sudden people looked at her and said, wow, she sings jazz better than Casey does. I think that was the turning point. I think at that point, Casey actually lost some ground because Haley is cuter. And so then things started to get set up. Okay, we got rid of Paul. Those votes had to go someplace. Then we got rid of Casey. Those votes had to go someplace. And that's, I think, really the key here. Where do the votes go when the people who are voting for a given contestant have to end up voting for somebody else because that contestant is booted? When Casey left, I don't think there's any question that Haley inherited most of his votes. Some of the other male contestants might have inherited some of the teeny bopper votes, but Kaylee is cute enough, and she's the underdog now, and people... Haley is cute enough, and she's the underdog now, that some people may have switched to one of the other guys, but I really think that when it came to Casey leaving the show, that Haley probably inherited most of his votes. All right, so that takes us down to 5. So it was Jacob Lusk and Scotty McCreery and James Durbin and Lauren, can't remember her last name, and Haley. So now the next one who goes, that gives Haley enough of a boost that puts her above Jacob. The next one to go is Jacob. Now then, when Jacob goes, where do those votes disappear to? Well, Jacob wasn't necessarily a hottie that all the little girls were screaming for. He was more of a Luther Vandross type guy or the other blues singers. Soul singers, where do his votes go? Well, some of them may go country, but they're pretty much not going to go heavy metal. And so they're probably not going to go to James Durbin. And there again, you have Haley, who has sung bluesy stuff. And so all of a sudden, people who are voting for genre the place that they will most naturally go is Haley. So now Haley is in a position that she starts vacuuming up votes for precisely the reason that the judges have been so hard on her. They don't know who she is as an artist. She keeps moving around her style. They don't feel she always puts everything she has into it. She's in that indeterminate middle. And so every time you lose someone who's dedicated to a style, Haley vacuums up those votes. Last night on American Idol, she vacuumed up enough votes that it put her above James Durbin, which was a shocker to most everybody. And they didn't actually say who the front runner was last night. They've stopped that. Well, they never say that kind of stuff. So we never really know what's going on. And maybe one of the reasons that the American Idol judges are so hard on Haley is because she is vacuuming up votes, although who knows whether they actually know or not. So now James Durbin is gone. Now the question is, where do his votes go? And I'm guessing they go to Haley as well, most of them. Now you can say, well, the teeny bopper vote is going to vote for the other guy, but Scotty McCreery and James Durbin are two completely different people. And for people who are, like, hot for James Durbin, I don't think that translates to Scotty McCreery, and Scotty McCreery is country, and James Durbin is heavy metal, and Lauren is country, light. And of the three that are left, Scotty and Haley and Lauren, Haley is the only one that's shown any growl, that's shown any grit. And so I think she vacuums up a majority of the votes that James Durbin leaves on the table. And so I think that puts her in the top two, no question. So next week, what I expect to see is Lauren to be gone, simply because not everybody who watches American Idol likes country. Now then, that brings it down to Haley and Scotty McCreery. All right, so when Lauren goes, where do those votes go? Well, some of those people are country and they like country, so they may vote country, but Haley has sung country too. And if they were big Scotty McCreery fans, they would already be voting for Scotty McCreery. But they aren't voting for Scotty McCreery. They're voting for Lauren. Maybe because she's a girl. In that case, Haley stands to vacuum up those votes as well, as long as she sings well. So, structurally, what I expect to happen at this point is for Haley to get James Durbin's votes. That puts her up close to tied with Scotty if she isn't there already. And then when Lauren leaves next week, I expect Haley to inherit Lauren's votes, and that puts her above Scotty. Now, the only way that that doesn't work out is if Lauren and Scotty are getting a ton more votes than it looks like they're getting. It's possible that Scotty McCreery is getting twice as many votes as the two girls put together. Well, is getting more votes than the two girls put together. That's possible. It's highly unlikely, but it's possible. I think what puts Haley over the top, though, is the fact that James Durbin, she's going to get most of his votes as well. So anyways, that's my prediction. So anyway, end of the world. We probably really won't even have to worry about this because the end of the world is coming May 21st. I don't know if you've been following any of this, but the end of the world is coming May 21st, according to Family Broadcasting or Family Bible Network something. This old preacher is on there. He has calculated it all out. He's run the numbers. It's May 21st, 2011. Never mind that he already calculated this once and it came out to 1994. And lo and behold, we're still here. He just made a mistake somewhere in Matthew 24, they said, but now he's got that corrected, so everything's great. I first heard about this story, and I think I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. And last week, I think it was last week, I read a story on NPR about some of his followers, and I just read this one. Now, it's free will. Anybody gets to believe anything they want to believe, but it's just sad. There's people in this story that are saying, well, you know, we've planned our finances to where we're not going to have any money left at all come May 21st, because why should we worry about retirement or things, because it's the end of the world. And so they are literally spending their last dollar on May the 21st or the day before May the 21st because they're ready to go in the rapture then. There's guys, the reporter asked them, what are you going to do if you're here on May the 22nd? And he said, well, then I'll be in hell, because it'll just be hell on earth May 22nd. And if I'm here, I don't intend to be here, because I believe. Because all these people have been told, apparently, that if you don't fervently believe, without a doubt, that Christ is coming back on May the 21st, you're going to get left behind. And if you get left behind, that's it. There is no chance you're ever going to make it to heaven. Yeah, well, if you've listened to any of these podcasts, you know how I feel about this already. But when I was reading this, I thought, you know, it is an interesting thing to examine how people would behave if they really thought their time on Earth was short. And next week, we're going to kind of continue with this theme of the end of the world, because I was reading an article about a guy who was in seat 1D on the plane that went down in the Potomac River, the miracle on the Potomac, and how he had given a talk at the TED Talks on how eerie it was to be sitting in a plane when the engines aren't going and it's quiet, and you realize that this plane is going down and you expect to die. And the things that went through his mind at that point, and what has changed since then. So we're going to talk about that next week. But anyway, so in the interest of performing due diligence, I thought, well, if the world's going to end May the 21st, maybe I should go out to the website and read through this guy's stuff and just see, you know, if he just makes a ton of sense and everything, who knows, I may go out and start telling people it's the end of the world. So I go to the Family Broadcasting something, I don't know, website. And I start to read through the irrefutable proofs. That's what they have on there. Irrefutable proofs that the rapture will take place on May the 21st. And one of their irrefutable proofs is that if you go to Genesis, I think it was Genesis 7:4, if you go there, you see that God tells Noah, in 7 days, I'm going to send the floods on the earth. My wrath is coming on the earth in 7 days. Well, the irrefutable proof is, well, see, God wasn't just saying that to Noah. God was actually giving us a hint when the end of the world would be. Because 1,000 years with the Lord is as a day, and a day is as 1,000 years. So therefore, when God said in 7 days, when he said that to Noah, we're supposed to be clever enough to figure out what God was really saying is, and then in another 7,000 years, there I'm going to destroy the earth for sure this time. So then, that's the first thing. So it's 7,000 years. Then, in addition to that, since we all know that the Great Flood took place in 4990-something B.C., all you have to do is the math. And then you come to the year 2011. And then they've got some other stuff that they go through to figure out that it's May 21st. So that's one of their irrefutable proofs. And then their second irrefutable proof is that, well, everybody knows that Jesus was crucified on some day in 33 AD. And if you take that date and you count the number of days different between that date and May the 21st, 2011, what you find is that there are, I think it's 722,500 days. Well, it's actually 500.07, but then they conveniently drop the .07 because they're not sure what to do with that. So, and you say, well, okay, 722,500, why is that an important number? Well, that's an important number because numbers that are made up of other numbers that have significance in the Bible then have meaning. And so then they go through this big explanation about how that there are certain numbers in the Bible that mean certain things. And so then when you find other numbers that are combinations of those numbers, God is using his secret code to tell you what those numbers mean. And so the irrefutable proof that Jesus is coming back on May the 21st, 2001, I'm backing into my garage, so I'm going to talk louder, is the fact that 722,500 is actually 5 times 10 times 17 times 5 times 10 times 17. So God took these key numbers and put them in there twice. And those numbers show the completion of salvation. And so that's why Jesus has to, the believers in this, he's got to come back on May the 21st because they are not wrong. Okay. Oh, anybody gets to believe anything they want to believe. That's fine. But when I hear of all this, what I hear coming from all this is people who don't want to live life today, that they just want to escape from this life. They want to have it all be over, you know, and then they want to believe that they're the only ones who know the truth and everybody else is wrong. And we're in our little club over here and we're going to try to tell people, but man, if they don't believe us, that's it. They can't ever get saved and they're all going to hell. So I thought I would just do a couple of podcasts here on the end of the world and say that now we have 8 days left. So if you got anything you're wanting to do before the end of the world, I would suggest that you look into it, you know, over the next 8 days, because according to these people, no one is going to be here. Well, if you're here on May the 22nd, which is a Sunday, it's going to be a really bad day. There's going to be earthquakes. There's going to be all sorts of things. And then 153 days later, then there's going to be this huge destruction and it's all over. And the reason we know that is because 153 is this combination of these numbers. And so then they go through this whole thing of saying, well, and, you know, when Jesus was resurrected, there were 153 fish that were caught by his disciples. And so that means this, and that was the end time. You can interpret that like, I mean, there's just all this pixie dust that's getting thrown. And the justification for why it was 153 is because it's the combination of these numbers. And I actually read somebody else that had a different justification for why it was 153. And frankly, I like 153 second justification better than the first one. And that is that 153 is a cubed sum. It is a very, very cool number. It is a number where you can take the digits that make up the number and you can cube each of them, multiply them by themselves and by themselves again, and then add them together, and they come back to the original number. It's very cool. So you have 1, 5, and 3. 1 times 1 times 1 is 1. 5 times 5 times 5 is 125. 3 times 3 times 3 is 27. So if you take 125 plus 127, you come to 152 plus 153. See, it's very cool. It's very cool. Maybe that's the reason there are 153 fish. But to just... to just take these numbers and then arbitrarily tear them apart to try to find a match in numbers that you know are important and then just sort of make up the rules as you go to make everything fit. You know, this is probably a lot of effort for any real benefit. And it would probably just benefit you and I far more just to focus on today and living well today in Him, showing his kindness and generosity to people, and not driving around in RVs, as our friends over at Family Broadcasting are doing, with big signs plastered on the side that say, the end of the world is coming on May the 21st. Because frankly, I think we can get a lot more done by building relationships with people, by being kind and generous to them, by showing them the love of Christ, than we can by driving around and telling them these kind of bogus, weird, numerical games and expecting them to go along for the ride just because we've convinced ourselves it's true. But again, everybody gets to believe what they want to believe. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home. I will talk to you next week.